All right, let's get started. First, shkosh to everybody for being here, and for Global Texas for having us again. We're finishing up the halachos of Boer, and to be honest, I don't actually remember what I said last week. I mentioned last week a couple things we were going to talk about this week. I remember one of them, and that we definitely will talk about this week. And I think I mentioned one or two other things that I wanted to briefly discuss, and to be honest, I don't remember what they were. If anybody happens to remember, those of you who are here, I think only you were here last week, right?
We were at Aziz.
Yeah. So you two weren't here. So if
the straining,
right? So strain, right?
The thing had a when you right. The kind of spoon that has a draining thing in it, so you can use it for it when you cannot. Aziz didn't have one in his house.
Ah, okay, fine.
So that's one thing we talked about.
Fine. Okay, so we'll discuss that. Anything else that you remember that we mentioned that we wanted to finish up this week? No. Okay, if you remember, you let us know. Okay. Beseder. So this week we're going to talk about straining, which is also the melacha of merakid, which we'll discuss in just a second. And then there's a couple other practical applications of boer to finish up, which I don't think we actually went through. Some of the last stuff about books and silverware and maybe toys and stuff like that. We discussed some of it last week, but I don't think that we finished certain types of the applications of that, which in the Shmir Shas Kilchasa here is the very, very last section of Parag Gimel. So if we have time at the end, which way I think we will, we'll discuss a little bit about that, and that should be the end of Boger, and next week we'll be on to Tochin, God willing, to grinding. Okay, so straining is one of the aspects of Boger. Straining is also, usually, according to most, is the Malacha of Merakid. Okay, meaning we said at the beginning, just to review, we said that there was three different types of malachas that have to do with boer, okay, with separation. One was called boer, one was zoreh, if you remember, and one is merakid. Okay? Zoreh, we said, was winnowing. That's when you blow the outside of the stalk, the husk, whatever, away from the kernel on the inside. That, we said, was about using the wind. Then we had discussions about that in terms of if there's anything that's included, shaking stuff out in the wind, or do you have to separate, or is just blowing in the wind. That was zoreh. And now we've been talking about boer. Boer in the Mishkan we said was the separation of the kernels of wheat or whatever of grain from the rocks and the pebbles that were on the ground, taking away the rocks and the pebbles. And boer, as we've been discussing, is generally taking the psoa, that which you don't want, away from that which you do want from the ochel. Merakid in the Mishkan and in the series of Malachas, Merakid is straining. Okay, Merakid is basically when you have, in the context of making flour, so Merakid is when you have, let's say you already have your flour, meaning you've already ground, and this, by the way, we'll explain now, the next step after taking the kernel is to grind it into flour. Okay, that's tochin. That's what we're going to talk about next week. But Merakid, which comes afterwards, we're discussing together this week, is because it's really related to boer. But the actual activity takes place after you grind the flour. Now you have flour, okay? The thing is, flour has different parts, okay? Some of the flour is better, more finely, fine flour than other parts. Coarse flour, and basically what you want to do in order to make your bread very nice, at least not regular bread, is to basically sift away, to strain away all of the impurities and all of the thicker parts of the flour that you're not going to be using for the bread. So that's called merakid, and merakid is generally done with a utensil. So what we're going to see here is that merakid basically includes any types of sifting or straining using a utensil where you have, and this is discussed in the Gemara and the Rishonim a little bit, where you have, let's say, the part that you want goes through the sifter and into the bottom, or the other way around. The part that you want stays on the top and the part that you don't want goes through on the bottom. Okay, just to give you two examples, we already mentioned one, and then we'll look at the halachos inside, at least one or two of them. A case of flour, let's say you want to sift flour. Even today, when we sift flour here in Israel, we generally try to sift flour because of bug issues. Again, we won't get into the halachas of that right now. In general, it's not an absolute 100% obligation, but it's very strongly halachically recommended to sift your flour here in Eretz Yisrael because of what they call mizid hamatzoi, a significant minority of cases where there are little bugs in the flour. So it's generally best to sift the flour. That type of thing would be a type of merakid, because you're using a sifter, either an electric sifter or a hand sifter, and the flour is going down through the sifter and into the bottom, into whatever bowl you have on the bottom. And whatever impurities or bugs or whatever is going to be left over on the top, that's going to be your psoleh. So that's one type of merakid. And the Aretz HaMarakid is the other way around, where the part that you want is staying on the top. Okay, this gets to the case Moshe was mentioning before that we had mentioned last week very briefly. I'll just give you another example to illustrate the point. Let's say you have noodles, okay, and you just cook the noodles in water. So again, you're not going to be cooking the water, heating it up on Shabbos, probably. But the idea, you understand, you can get the point, is when you take the water, you cook the water, and you take the noodles, and you want to strain the noodles and get rid of the water. Right? This is what you do when you make noodles, probably, at least I think most people do this. Okay, so how do you get rid of the water? What do you do? So one way is just to pour it out in the sink with the top of the pot or whatever, but the more professional way of doing it is using whatever they call this, the colander, right? So what do? So to take that, basically, you put the noodles on the top, okay? The noodles stay on the top, and the water goes through the holes down into the sink on the bottom. So this is the opposite type of straining, where what you want, the ochel, is staying on the top, and the psoa that you don't want, which is the water in this case, goes down to the bottom, okay? So the Rishon, there's a machloket at exactly whether both of those examples is merakid the av malacha or not. But halacha, it's clear that both of them definitely, you know, as halacha, definitely both are included in halacha. And both are asur. Okay, maybe one is called borer, one is called merakid. It doesn't really matter. I'm just using the term merakid for a description. Could be, you know, one of those cases is borer. But either way, it's definitely asur d'oraisa. Okay, both of those cases are asur in terms of straining. So let's look at the most important, I guess, halacha here when it comes to straining. There are a few examples we'll mention briefly. But I think that the most common one today is probably related to water, meaning...
What about tuna fish?
Was that? Okay, so that we mentioned, that we did talk about last week, actually, I think, if I remember correctly. We talked about the tuna fish discussion, right? Yeah, we had that whole discussion last week. So that's not really
miraculous. Back to that when the hole's in the bottom.
Right. Meaning that, I think. Right. That's true, yeah. Thank you for reminding me. I told you I thought it was. What did I think? I thought it was okay.
You thought it'd be okay, but
it was
okay. No, whatever.
Right. And Moshe had a very interesting question last time. Basically, the tuna fish example, just what we discussed, is that it's a problem to strain out the water from the tuna fish can on Shabbos because you're getting rid of the psoa. Which is the water or the oil from the tuna, which is the ochel. So if you're getting at the water and keeping the tuna, that's a real problem. That's not even a question of straining, because there, yes, you're straining, but you're not using, you're using the top of the utensil of the tuna can in order to do it, if, at least one of the ways that we talked about. So that's not even a question of what we're talking about, an actual straining device. I don't know if you would use that for tuna. We said in that case, the best thing to do with the tuna, one of the best things to do is to either take out the tuna and leave the water, which again is not so simple, and it makes your tuna a little more liquidy. We said another option was, if your tuna is chunky, you can take it and open it and just plop it down on a plate and then take the tuna and it will spill out everywhere. But again, it depends on the substance, what your tuna is like, okay, if it's more solid or more liquid. And Moshe had another interesting example, which I still have to get back to about, which is basically if you make holes in the tuna can on the bottom, which anyway might be... Chazon Ish talks about this. We'll have to talk about this later in our series. Not making a utensil. So if you open up a tuna can, so he says that's making a utensil. You made a usable utensil that you didn't have before, because now it's open. So he says that you have to make holes in the tuna can in order to get rid of that problem. So again, that we'll discuss at another time. Moshe says, well, once you do that, so why don't you make the holes in the bottom of the tuna can, and then the liquid comes out from the bottom, and you're left with the tuna on the top. Is that considered to be a problem of borer? So I said, maybe it's not a problem, because it's not really your intention. Is maybe to just get rid of it, make sure the can is not usable afterwards, as a can that can hold things without holes. So even though it happens to be that the liquid comes out, if that wasn't really your intention and you didn't do it directly, you didn't actually take the stuff out, it oozed out by itself. So maybe that might be okay. But I wasn't 100% sure.
With the caveat that, you know, one small hole would make it no longer a vessel, and if make three or four holes, maybe you are doing it to drain it out.
Right, so that's so. That correct, right? That good point.
Got to be some line there.
Good point. Yeah. So that would definitely be true.
What's the issue with the vessel? I don't understand.
Okay, we'll have to discuss that at a different time in terms of law. The question is that you're not allowed to create a functional utensil on Shabbos. So there's a good chance that opening up a tuna can creates a utensil which was there before, but now it's usable because now it's open. You can put something in if you want. Again, the Chazon Ish feels that you do have to make a hole in the tuna can, and many people do that. It could be that maybe you don't have to, because who would use it today? In those days, 50 years ago, tuna cans were very valuable, or sardines. I think sardines cans were more, at the time, more common. But today, who's going to use a tuna can? That's all disgusting. Well, you know, so it could be today, if absolutely not one person would ever use a tuna can after they opened it, it could be that today you don't have to do that. That's what we'll have to discuss at some later point. But when it comes to this, I actually asked my wife about this also, what she thought. And she thought, She's like, why would how would enough liquid get out with just one or two holes that would make it worthwhile? It probably wouldn't help very much.
I can bring it next week. So, if you guys like tuna afterwards, lean that I can bring the tuna. I can demonstrate what we're talking about.
You once made a good tuna.
All right, yeah, so love to see.
If you want tuna next
love
week,
to see.
Let me know.
Love to see.
This is Starkist chunky tuna, and the liquid really does come flowing out.
Wow, look at that.
It fills up the... I mean, you never work with the oil, but the liquid one, the water one, is it works very nicely.
Okay, shkoch. So if you remember,
that remind
me. If you want to also remind me, okay. You know, to check and see if I can find any other relevant sources, I have to look into that a little more. Okay, the seder. So that's that. Now for some of our examples. So similar to the strainer's case we had now, so we mentioned last week also the spoon. I think they call it a slotted spoon. That's what we were talking about last week. You have a spoon which has holes in the spoon. So you put it, let's say, in soup, and you want to take out solid stuff from the soup, and the liquid goes back down. You know what we're talking about?
You have a bowl of string beans in the liquid. String beans in the liquid.
So the question... But it's solid, like you're taking...
So that's the question. The question is, why are you using it?
Because you just want the vegetable.
So assuming that the reason why you're using it, let's say you could use it for a cholent also, you want to take out the... Let's say a cholent is very liquidy, and you want to just take out the solid parts of your cholent. So use one of these spoons with holes in them. There's different kinds. Some have very long, thin holes. Some have very small, little holes. Either way, though, the general point of the spoon is to take out the liquid. So there, I don't remember if it's in the Shmir Shabbos, right? I think it's here somewhere. I don't remember really where it is. But basically, what's generally assumed to be the halacha in that situation is that assuming that you care about the function of the spoon, meaning assuming that you want the spoon to do its job and to get rid of the liquid which is going in, so it seems like it's usher to use that spoon on Shabbos. It's usually assumed. Okay? Because even if you take out the good from the bad, you take out the solid pieces that you want, which is ochel mitoch psolet, but still, clearly the spoon is considered to be a kli. So that's exactly the case of meraki that we're talking about here. We're using a kli, using a utensil, which is designed for a form of borer, and separating on Shabbos. So it's definitely usually assumed that that would be a problem. The only question is, when you use that spoon, you didn't really need to use the spoon. Meaning, let's say, in a case where you're picking up, like, pieces of kugel, or even pieces of chicken, with that spoon, or something like that. Or, I guess that's the best example. You're picking up solid with it, and there's no liquid in it. There's no liquid at all. So in that case, you don't really care. Even if there is a little bit of liquid on the bottom, or something like that, if something gets separated through, maybe even little pieces, let's say you have chicken and rice, and I don't know what. But you don't really care what's going through the holes. Your main point is to get the solid, okay? So in that case, it could be that seems to be that in that case it's mutter to use the spoon, even though you're using the same kli, because in that case the kli doesn't really do a function that you actually desire. Okay?
I don't understand the difference between...
If we're having a meat platter, you're just using it to scoop the meat off the plate, that's fine. But if you have it something with liquid and solid together, and you're using it to get the solid out of the liquid, that's when it's being used as a separator. When you're picking up the meat, you're just using it as something to pick up. You could be using a shovel.
You're not getting the gravy.
You're not using the whole.
No, you don't care. Let's say there's no gravy.
Okay.
It wouldn't make any difference.
So you're just using it because it's out of convenience. That's what you have around.
If there's no gravy, I understand. But if there is gravy, you're still separated.
Right. So then the question is, then presumably it will be a problem, because they're assuming that you don't want the gravy. It's actually helpful for you.
Right.
Okay. That's exactly the point.
Love gravy.
Right. What'd you say?
Love gravy.
So then you're right. Then one could argue that in that case maybe it would still be okay. Because if you really wanted the gravy and you happen to use that spoon, then all the gravy is falling out. So again, it's not doing any job that you want it to do.
Right.
So in that case, the bower, the separation is not really desired. And if it's not desired, maybe it's not significant.
So then would it be okay, like, let's say I have a big plate of gravy, use a big spoon, and I go like this? Put the gravy on my plate.
Again, tell me what's weird again.
This is all gravy.
So a big plate of gravy.
Gravy and chicken.
Okay. Okay. And chicken. And meatballs. Okay, fine. Meatballs and
sauce. I just want the gravy and I use
Okay, so what do you do?
I use my cup.
You use a cup.
To strain the gravy onto my plate.
So the cup is blocking the meatballs?
Yeah.
Meaning you only want the gravy.
Yeah.
And you're using a cup to block the meatballs while you tilt the plate over.
Yeah.
So then the cup is blocking the meatballs and the gravy is going onto your plate.
Yeah.
Okay. So that would be... That's okay, so number one. So you can think about this a little bit if anyone wants to offer your thoughts.
Sounds like we have all the meat. It should be fine, right?
We're doing ochel. Okay, it's definitely
ochel. You're not using a special kli.
Okay.
And it's for miyat, right?
Right.
But in the tuna can situation where you didn't want the liquid, it's the exact opposite, but it was a problem.
Right, so that's the only thing. I mean, that we mentioned last time that according to some poskim, which the guy thought the halacha masa, this makes sense to follow, if you take, let's say, a lid of a tuna can and use the lid to strain out the liquid, that's what we discussed, I think we discussed this a few weeks ago, in the Shulchan Aruch, in the first sif of Shin Yotet. So he mentioned it there, that if you have these utensils, which are, he talked about a plate and a funnel, which are utensils, but they're not usually used for borer. Mm-hmm. But he said, if you use them for borer right now, even if they're not usually used for that purpose, it's also drabanan. Okay, so it's not zaraisa, but it's a clean midrabanan, and therefore midrabanan, you still shouldn't use it. So I would guess that in that situation, it could be that if you actually use the cup to do that, then that might be the same thing.
Yes,
and it might still be asur drabanan to do that on Shabbos. That would be my guess.
But aren't you taking ohal
midrabanan? So it doesn't matter, that's the point. I mean, even if you do ohal midrabanan, but you use a kli, so
but
still,
it's not
you
a special,
get the
I mean, you're using a cup. A cup is not.
I understand. Yeah, correct. That's exactly the point, though. I mean, if you go back to Sibal.
You're not using a specialized.
You understand? Yeah. That's exactly what he's talking about there. I mean, that's exactly what he says when he says, based on the Gemara, that if you use a kanon or a tamchoi, kanon is the funnel, and tamchoi is the plate. If you use those which are not boer utensils, but if you choose to use them in one particular situation for the purpose of separation, so that's pater avalos, meaning it's asur drabanan. So again, the example that I mentioned, according to some poskim, which I think makes sense, and this is generally accepted, is to take, let's say, the top of a tuna can or the top of a pot, let's say, even with, you know, noodles or, you know, anything that you cook in water, and you use the pot to block the solids from coming out of the pot, and then the liquids all get out through the little hole on the side or something like that. So then that's still probably asur drabanan, because it's considered to be a clean midrabanan. So even though you're taking what you want from what you don't want in this situation that we're talking about here, it probably still be usher midrabanan. That's what
just
I was
because
think.
It's a kli.
Yeah, I mean, because it's a kli that's being used, and you're like, you know, you're drafting the kli to use for boer, so to speak. So that's what I would think.
I've seen people more, do what is it? Like, yeah. I don't know. If you open a can of corn, right?
Right.
You don't want the liquid.
Okay.
Right. So someone said that you just pour it into the sink, and you really can't do any.
How do you pour it into the sink?
Slowly.
You said without a top, without any.
Without a top, you right. Just pour it really slowly, okay. So the liquid starts just comes out. Somebody may lose a little bit of corn into the sink.
So here's the problem. So that gets rid of the kli problem. Then you don't have a problem with using a kli. The problem is, in that case, you're back to the original problem. You're taking away the part that you don't want. You're taking the psolet from the ochel. And then one would think that would be a problem of boer regardless, right?
So you're saying it doesn't matter?
Doesn't solve the problem, right? I mean, it gets rid of the kli problem, but then you're still pouring out the water. What you need to do is basically take out the corn that you want
just
from the water that you don't want.
Or whatever.
Yeah, a regular spoon to take out the corn. Again, it's a little annoying. It gets more liquid than you would want, but it works much better. Okay, it's not horrible. Then you can do it again if you have to. Pour, you know, corn into a bowl, add a little liquid in the bowl from the corn.
So, pour the corn again with another spoon,
you know, somewhere else.
So would a spoon wrap be considered a kli?
So that's what we discussed also, I think, one of the weeks that you weren't there. We discussed that most poskim hold that silverware. Anytime that silverware can do the job that you could do, just it's more convenient, is mutter. That's called yada arichta. It's an extension of your hand. Okay. That's mutter. Only if the silver can do a job more effectively in terms of the separation than you could do, then it might be a question. Meaning if they can separate the liquid from the solid, and your hand can't do that in a way, when you're not just taking out a chunk of solid, it's more complicated than that, then it could be that it's more of a problem. That'd be the story in terms of that. The only other thing you could do, maybe we mentioned this last week also, is the same way that in the case of, let's say, you have your fly in your drink or something like that, where we said that you can take out some of the drink with your fly. So it could be here also that if you drain out, if you take out, let's say in your case of the, you don't use a kli.
So some of the corn comes out with it too.
Yes, yeah. It could be in that case, maybe that's okay. Again, you can't use a kli, that doesn't help that.
Right.
But if you take out the liquid, you know, slowly pour it out into the sink and some of the corn comes out with it, so then one could argue that maybe that's okay. The problem is you have to think about whether that's really the same thing. Meaning in the case of the drink and the fly, what you're doing is you're basically taking out some of the...
Good with it,
man. Yeah, you're taking the fly is here and the drink that's around it is coming out with it. So the whole mixture is coming out. In the case of the corn and the liquid, I don't know if that's really what's happening. Meaning the liquid's coming out and the corn happens to come out with it, but I don't know, it's sort of the same thing. I mean, the liquid is coming out on its own, dripping out, and a few pieces of corn come with it. I'm not sure. I have to think about whether that's really the same thing or not. I don't know. Because I don't know if it's... You're not keeping the mixture. Again, this may depend on the Mishnah Berurah versus the Chazon Ish, which we discussed, which I'm not going to get back into now. But I don't know if that really means you're maintaining the mixture. You're really maintaining the mixture when the liquid comes out and the corn comes out. It's not... they come out separately. I mean, the liquid comes out at its own pace, and the corn comes out at its own pace. They don't really come out together, in which case that shows you that you're not really maintaining the mixture of liquid and corn together. Okay. I don't know. I'm not sure to think about that. It might depend on how it comes out. I mean, if you pour out the liquid and all the corn comes with the liquid, then maybe that might be okay. But I don't know. I mean, it's not like the same thing as a fly, where there's one fly. You take out one fly at one time with some other stuff here. The liquid is, you're pouring it out for a couple seconds. It's all, I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not thrilled about it. Again, in the books, what they say when they talk about these kind of cases, in the books, they always say take out the corner of the stuff that you want, to take out the ochel from the soul. I don't remember ever that discussion being discussed. So I would tend to think that it probably is not the best thing. If you find somewhere that somebody says that you could do that, please feel free to show me to discuss it. Okay, great. So that's the story with some of those applications. Let's go now to the question of the water, all right, and filtering. All right. Can you filter water on Shabbos, or is that a problem of Merakid? So the rules of filtering and water and Merakid on Shabbos are maybe slightly different from what we've been talking about in terms of the rest of Borer, as we'll see. Though when it comes to filtering, it seems like the rules are a little bit more lenient, interestingly enough. So you take a look at your Mishnah Berurah and Shulchan Aruch, and we said before, Siman Shin Yud Tet, Seif Yud.
Does the water filter actually work?
Ah, you tell me. All right, first there's a few different kinds of filtering we could talk about. They may all be the same halacha, but just so we know what we're dealing with here. So first you have...
What'd you say? Like reverse osmosis?
Something like that. I mean, basically the first thing you have is... First thing that everybody has is a strainer on their sink, okay? Then you have on your faucet, you're going to have a strainer with little holes that blocks anything that's going to come down. Mm-hmm. Okay, everybody has that. That's just every faucet has that. Okay, you can, that's something you might want to, you sometimes clean off. It's got tiny little holes, the water comes through, and anything else, slightly bigger would get stuck there. So that's one issue. Can you use your sink on Shabbos? The answer is going to be yes, of course, and you probably stop coming to this year if I told you the answer is no. but that's one issue. And then you have the other kinds of filter. One filter is a filter that goes on your sink. You can attach the filter to your sink itself. That filters the water to make it clean. Right? Another type of filter is, let's say, a Brita. A Brita, basically, pour your water into the top of the Brita, then it goes through the Brita system and then comes out on the bottom. Again, for both of those two examples, what's happening is that any impurities that are not going to be desired are going to be stuck, blocked off on the top before it goes to the bottom. Again, it could be bugs, it could be dirt, it could be, other types of things that might be in the water. That's all going to be blocked off and separated by your filter. So the question is going to be, is that considered a problem of Borer? What would you, without looking at the halacha, what would you guess based on what we've seen so far? What would you tend to think? Think it through.
I've learned it already.
Okay, so then you're puzzled. You can't answer, right? Okay. You would think that the halacha would be that you are taking what you want from what you don't want, meaning what's coming out is the good, that's the ochel. So you're taking the ochel from the sola. You would think that's okay. However, the question is, a filter is probably a utensil, right? It's probably a kli, right? So you would think that it should still be usher, because even though you're taking what you want from what you don't want, one would think that if you're using a Borer utensil, a professionally designed Borer utensil, such as a filter, it should be usher, right? That's what I would think. Comes along the Shulchan Aruch based on the Gemara and says, actually, not necessarily. It's a little complicated, but we'll see what we can figure out here. Look at Sif Yud. Okay, so there are going to be a few different levels here, which I'll do my best to explain, but it might get a little confusing. We'll try to get the bottom line afterwards. He says, Yain omaim shehem slulim. All right, you have water or wine, which is clear. All right, Sif Yud and Siman Shud Yotet. So the question is, can you strain them from any tiny little impurities or whatever that might be present in the wine or the water? But again, the key point here is that it's clear. Okay, we'll see how that impacts in just a minute. The halacha is mutar b'sanan mishmeret. You're allowed to use a strainer to strain them. Okay, a strainer is considered to be a normal, regular utensil used for Borer, for Merakid, I guess, for straining on Shabbos. Okay, but he says it's permissible. And then the Ramah adds, v'afal pi sheyesh bo kis min dakan. Even if you have little chips or little pieces of whatever kismin dakin could be. Sometimes it means wood. Here, again, it could mean any little, tiny little things in the water. Other kinds of things also. The Ramah says, even so, it's still permissible. Why? This is the key point. Hol ru'uyin lishtos b'lav hachi. What does that mean? Since the water is drinkable without it. So what does that mean? And then we have more examples here also, which we'll get to in a minute. But just let's get, this is our main case. So let's try to understand this. What's he saying here? What does it mean? It's, you can drink it without the strainer.
What? And you said the population would drink the water. Oh. You want yours a little bit better, so you do whatever you're doing.
Okay, good. Basically, good. That's what the Mishnah Berurah says. he says, if you look in Sifkat on Lama Dalad, so he says in Lama Dalad, Mutter, since without the straining, the water is still, or the wine is still clear, and it's drinkable. Therefore, there's no problem of borer. Clear is defined as any type of liquid where it's drinkable without straining it. For rov b'nei adam, what does rov b'nei adam mean?
More than half.
The majority of people. Meaning the most people in that locale would drink the liquid, let's say we'll take water, okay, without straining the water, without filtering the water. Then he says, V'yesh machmirim d'dafa k'shekul michol nishtos kach. Some people are machmir when everybody, you know, can drink it like that. Meaning not just more than 50%, but almost everybody. And the only reason why you strain it is so that it's really, really clear. Okay? Etc., etc. So, the truth is that, I guess, let me phrase it with a question first. You understand the point here? The point is that as long as the water is generally drinkable, either for most of the population or for almost all the population, without straining it, so then it would be permissible. So the question is, how do we deal, based on this, how do we deal with our water? Let's read the rest of the Shulchan Aruch before we answer that question, but that's the question we're going to be asking, obviously. Okay, how does this apply to our water? If you read the rest of the Shulchan Aruch, he says, let's get the next line. It says, "Aval b'sudar mayim asur mishum libun v'ayin u'shar ma'ashkin mutzer." Let's skip that line because that sudar has a different sort of using a cloth, and that already is going to get into different issues of laundering, of washing or wetting the cloth. That's not our relevant to us at all. So we'll keep that out for now. Then the next line says, "V'im heimachur." Let's say the water is dirty, okay, cloudy, dirty. So then what? "Beni mayim ben yayin asur asanam." In that case, water, wine, you cannot strain the water. Okay, why is that? Because that's really a real problem of borer. What is defined as achurim? So basically, if you look at the Mishnah Berurah in Sivkatan Mem, he says as follows: Asur sananam mishum borer. It's because of borer. Bein mishmeres, bein mesudar. Either using a mishmeres, a strainer, or a cloth. Either way is fine. And then he says, Umayri bachurim legamri the lo mishtase hachi klal. All right, it's totally dirty water where you can't drink it at all. Dilu bachur ktsas, because, and this is not a read by everybody, but many Rishonim say this, okay, that if it's just a little bit dirty, after the drishtehach, and you could drink it like that, just it's not preferable, but you could drink it if you needed to, you could drink it like that. Achrubid in she kapti shalosh dos ablisim, but most people, okay, they drink it, they try to drink it with, they will not drink it without sinun, without straining. Ein yisarak mishmeres, okay. Then you can't use a mishmeres, and you can't use a regular strainer. Rabba b'sudar and dein derech asanam rabba. If you have a system which is not the normal way of doing it, then it'll be mutter. So what he's saying here is that it's still usher to use a regular filter type of thing if it's slightly achur ktsas, if it's slightly dirty or slightly cloudy. So that would be a problem. Okay. Then the Rambam is even more machmir. He says that the Rambam holds that it could be, even if it's clear, if you're using a mishmeres, if you're using a strainer, there might be a problem. But again, we're not going to go into that now. Most poskim do not accept the Rambam, even though it's in the Shulchan Aruch, so I'm not going to skip it for now. Most poskim hold that it's that you don't need to be machmir like the Rambam in this situation. Maybe for wine, but definitely not for water. For water, you definitely don't need to be machmir like the Rambam. So what comes out of here? Basically, what we're saying from here is that as long as the water is drinkable by most or all people, without any type of straining, so then it would be fine. Now, this is what the poskim say. Okay, how do you define this type of clear water? I mean, let's say today, how do you define tap water? Is tap water considered to be drinkable, or is tap water considered to be even off of ktsas, like somewhat cloudy that most people wouldn't drink it without, what do you say? It depends where you are, obviously. But most places today, most normal places, what would you say? Drinkable. It's drinkable, right? I mean, yes, there are some people that will decide that they want to have pure water and they want to have bottled water and this and that. But when push comes to shove, and this is how most of the modern posts can define it, okay? I don't remember exactly where I saw this, but this is what most posts say. If you needed to drink water, okay, well, let's say, yes, you don't drink tap water, but if you were really thirsty and it's hot, would you drink tap water if you didn't have bottled water around? And that's most people will give is probably yes, okay? It's not worth it to get dehydrated just because you don't like tap water, okay? So in most situations, tap water is considered to be clear water, and therefore, tap water, according to most poskim, is permissible to filter on Shabbos, okay? Meaning you'd be allowed to put a filter on your sink, you'd be allowed to use a Brita on Shabbos, no problem, okay? That's what most poskim say. The question is, what about somebody who himself really will not drink filtered water? There are people like this, okay? I'm sure you know some of them, all right? People that really, really will, insist that they will not drink tap water. They just won't do it. They won't or can't do it. So then what? For them themselves, are they allowed to be makil and say, well, everybody else would drink it if they needed to, so I'm allowed to filter it also? Or do we say, no, for that person, he can't do it for himself? Maybe somebody else could do it for him, but he can't do it for himself. What do you think? What do you say?
I think it would be cruel to make it forbidden. The only person who really cares about it.
You're right, but what makes sense halakhically, though, right? I mean, you want to be nice, but halakhically, what makes more sense? That's the question. So let's look at the Be'er Halacha here, and then we'll look at the Shmir Shas Kochas in just a minute. So there's a Be'er Halacha. It's like three lines. It's on the left side of the page. Divrei HaMaaskel Hoel Uruin. It's the Be'er Halacha is the side with the little stars next to them. It's right in the middle of my page. At least I don't know about your page. I think Josh has the same one that I have. Divrei HaMaaskel Hoel Uruin. He says Umishu Istinus. Okay, somebody who's an Istinus. You know what an Istinus is? Very, very finicky or particular. Okay, he only drinks exactly this way. He won't drink it if there's any little things in the water. Okay, let's say our tap water. All right, where our tap water is generally drinkable. Okay, maybe not everybody wants to drink it all the time, but you will drink it if you need to. And somebody won't. He won't drink it. He can't drink it. Absolutely not. Okay, only bottled water. Even if he can't get bottled water right now, he can't. He can't do it. Efshar after ruba de inshi lo kapti klal. It could be that even if most people don't care, lo amrin baladato. In this case, okay, we don't say that his opinion is nullified in connection to everybody else's. Well, the day also to have a bower, and based on the prima gadam, for him it's considered bower. Maybe for everybody else it's a subjective issue, but for him, the flip side of the coin is that it's subjective for him. He doesn't want it. He refused to drink it without filtering it. He would not be allowed to filter on Shabbos. He would not be allowed to use a Brita or a filter on the sink. Meaning, again, he can, let's say, a Brita pitcher. He can pour the Brita pitcher because all he's doing is pouring the water. But can he fill it up with the water from the sink? According to what the Be'er Halacha is saying here, the answer is probably...
He said no.
Probably not. Right. Why? What are you doing when you fill up the Brita pitcher with water from the sink?
Pour it out, you're also, well...
making it drinkable for him.
Well, but right. Pouring it out, you're letting more water through, no?
How is
not
that?
Not the Brita.
I don't think so. Not the Brita. Usually, though, unless you're like so full that it can't go to the bottom. You're right. Maybe I'm different than most people.
Maybe.
Usually...
I think so. I don't know. I haven't used one in a while.
I understand. I think most people don't. I mean, they put in water enough that all the water will go to the bottom, and there's no water on the top section. The top section has not gotten filtered yet. So you're right. But assuming that all the water that you pour in all goes to the bottom within a couple minutes, once it's already on the bottom, it's fine. It's already filtered. The question is pouring the water into the Brita pitcher in the first place, and now it seems to be a problem according to the Be'er Halacha.
It is a problem.
Yeah. I mean, for somebody who really will not drink filtered water, will not drink the tap water, sorry.
Just for him.
For him. That's what the Be'er Halacha seems to be saying here. Okay. So let's read in the Shmir Shabbos, and I'll see if he confirms what we've been saying. He says, this is in the Shmir Shabbos, in the new version in Perek Gimel, Sif Samech and Samech Aleph. So he says here, sorry, it's just Samech. He says like this, Mutar l'ishtamesh b'beres mayim shal piv mutkenet masneh. You're allowed to use a faucet where you have a strainer on top of the faucet, which like all our faucets have. Okay, that's basically Chazon Ish. And a number of others. So then he says, "Im nafla misnet." If what's their strainer fell off, so then mutzalat zirak bo fanaraya. You can only put it back in a temporary manner, only because of the issue of bonek. It's attaching it back to the faucet, which is attached to the rest of the counter, which is part of the house. That would be usher. Then what about using a filter, not just the strainer, the straining, this little thing on top of your faucet? But actual filter. You can basically take clean water, derech misnein, put it through a filter, to make sure that it's totally, totally clean without any impurities whatsoever. That is the Shmir Shabbos Psak, and he says it's based on Rosh Lomazal and Orbach, because again, as we said, most people will drink the tap water even without using the filter. Okay? Good. Exactly what we said. However, he says, but in a place where there are people, most people do not use tap water without filtering it first. In a place where there are bugs in the water. Ooh. You can't use on Shabbos a filter of any sort to filter the water. Unless you drink the water straight out of the faucet. Which is interesting. We're not going to go into that now. That's another story, which has to be discussed, but it's based on a different halacha here in the Shulchan Aruch. I'm not going to go into that because it's not really so practical. It's Sif Ted Zion in the Shulchan Aruch, where he talks about water that has bugs in it. He says you're allowed to drink it if you use a cloth, because that's not considered to be the same kind of boer. Again, it's interesting, but it's not exactly our case because we don't usually use that type of filter today. So we're not going to go into it. For us, basically what the Shemir Shabbos is saying is in a place where there is bugs on the water, where there are bugs in the water, you're going to have a problem using a filter on Shabbos. Anybody know where that's relevant? Possibly? Perhaps? So there's still a bit of a discussion about this in New York, certain parts of New York City. This showed up on the scene about, I guess, 8 or 9 years ago, maybe? Yeah. I think about 8 or 9 years ago this showed up. Maybe even more than that. Maybe 10 years, 15 years ago already. Where they discovered these little bugs in the water in certain parts of New York City called copepods. Major, major halachic debate about this. Apparently everybody's drinking the water anyway. They're harmless, they don't do anything. But there's tons of these little bugs in the water in certain parts of New York City. And apparently one or two other places in the country, in the United States also. Okay, without going into the whole discussion, there's lots of interesting articles about this in English, which you can read. I can send you to them if you'd like. So what happened was that apparently the New York City water was so clean that they didn't need to filter the water in the reservoir before they sent it to New York. So basically these bugs called copepods, which are relatively clean, so they stayed in the water, even though everywhere else in the country they were filtered out. So because of that caused a big problem, number one, in terms of drinking, of eating bugs. Okay, during the week, a Jew can't have bugs. Okay, it's also to drink bugs, have bugs in the water. So, 5 or 6 different prohibitions. That's question number one. Maybe it's usher to drink the water. Okay, fine. So even if you tell me it's usher to drink the water, which many poskim did say, but you can put a filter on the water. Just put a filter on your sink, on your faucet, no problem, right? Everything's great. Except what do you do on Shabbos? So this is where you had some serious issues here and some big machlokes between different poskim. And I think it hasn't totally been resolved. I think this issue is still a little bit relevant, but more people are making them than they used to be. I'm not sure exactly what's going on now. Rav Shapter for YU was one of those that actually was machmir about this point. Rav Belsky, who works for the OU, was in Brooklyn. Rav Shimon Torah, so I think he was more makil on this issue. He actually thought that you could even drink the bugs, you could consume the bugs for various halachic reasons. That the way that the bugs grew was in the reservoir, so that's one of the technicalities that maybe bugs that grew in that area, according to the halacha, is different than bugs that grow in regular fresh water. Maybe it's permissible to drink them. Anyway, we're not going to go into that now. But on Shabbos, it's a real question. If you follow the more machmir position, you can't use a filter in your water on Shabbos because of this issue, because you're filtering the bugs out of the water. The same way that you wouldn't drink the water with impurities, you wouldn't drink the water with the bugs. So, according to that opinion, you got to filter all your water before Shabbos. You got to have like bottles and bottles of water before Shabbos in order to use. It's crazy, right? So this discussion about this, we're not going to go into it now. There's a big, interesting Chai Adam and Nishmas Adam about this question, where he discusses this issue. Is it really the same thing as cases of impurity in the water? Because here, people drink the water. Okay, he talks about a very similar case. In his time also, they had something similar. He says, people will drink the water, right? The only reason why Jews won't drink the water is not because it's not safe or it's not healthy, only because there's a halachic prohibition. Maybe that's different than a case of impurities in the water where most people won't actually drink the water because it's disgusting. That's the discussion. Okay, he's back and forth about it. In the end, he seems to conclude that maybe it's still a problem. But it seems like there may be some room to be lenient on that point. Though again, in practice halacha lemaaseh, it seems that those that are machmir about the issue in general also prohibit filtering the water on Shabbos. Again, a very, very fascinating halacha application of this issue. Hopefully it shouldn't happen anywhere else in the world because it creates a lot of problems.
This doesn't relate at all. Just ignore it.
Okay.
Is this at all related to the concept of people that won't use tap water and paste up, but they're afraid to just come in?
So the Shmir Shabbos Kilchos in one of the footnotes here actually addresses that question. It's in footnote Kuf Pei Aleph. He says that I've heard from Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Dilafiza elo hanoagim lo lishto the pesach elamayim mesudanim. Okay, those on Pesach who are very particular to only drink filtered water because of the concern that little crumbs of chametz might get into their water, especially in this country, in Eretz Yisrael. Yesh la'ayin eich mutar la'agir mayim derech hametz nemeh. How can you do that on Pesach or on Shabbos? So he says, V'afshar de kelen shelo nira le'einayim shum irbuv, since you can't see any mixture in the water with your eyes, it's not visible to your eyes, hurak choshesh de chashash chametz, you're only concerned about the chashash of chametz. Something which most people are not choshesh for at all, because most normal people, you know, couldn't, you know, certainly not concerned with. In fact, maybe one little crumb of bread got into the kinaret, into our water supply, you know. Lachem yistar with the shabbat the shari. He says, it seems that it probably is mutter, meaning that it's mutter to use the water on Shabbos with a filter, because you're not really, it's like chumra upon a chumra upon a chumra. You're not really concerned that there's any crumbs in the chametz, because most people know that that's not really a serious concern. Okay? And then he says, interesting, in the next line, he says, I found in the Kaf HaChaim, in this siman here, that in Yerushalayim, you know, 100 years ago or whatever, when he lived here for part of the time that he was alive, so he says they used to also filter the water because of Safek Tolim, because of the bug question. And then he says in the Kaf HaChaim they used to use a shiwi to filter it, which today is not really practical with our things, really. Again, very, very interesting, because that's the discussion that he has here. By the way, some of this gets into the question of how this works with the rest of Boer. The question of the bugs with the copepods is actually that they are visible. Meaning they're not visible if you look at it straight, but they're big enough, they're actually not microscopic, they're visible. Wow. The only thing is you gotta know how to find them. So basically there's a whole method of how to do it. If you take like a white cloth and you put it on the water and then you do something or other, then if you strain it with the cloth or something like that, you can actually see, from 10 years ago, I don't remember exactly how you do it. You actually can see the copepods. And apparently it's pretty scary, because people that did it, they saw afterwards, they saw like, not every part, you know, the ones that were infested, they saw all these little bugs in the water. It's crazy, right? And you're like, okay, I can't drink that, you know? Even if otherwise I wouldn't have noticed, but once I see them, I can't drink it, right? When it comes to the rest of this issue of filtering water, though, the rest of the water impurities are so small that it's not really the same thing as regular boer. Okay, it's not like you're separating the good from the bad in the same way, because they're, again, even if they're visible, but they're so small that it's not the regular kind of boer. So that may explain why, and some people say this, I don't remember who says this, but this may explain why the rules of Meraki, in this case of the filtering of water, are different than the rules of boer in general. Meaning in this case, we're allowing you to use a utensil to strain the water. Okay, even though you want the water, you don't want the impurities. Why isn't it the same thing as, let's say, you have two kinds of fruits or vegetables, and you want one and you don't want the other one? Both are edible, okay, but you want one, so you can't use a clay, you can't use a utensil to strain it or whatever. So here they say maybe it's different. In the case of filtering the water, even though you're using a utensil, because of the fact that the impurities are so small and so tiny, that it's not really the same thing as a regular case of boer. Okay, let's finish up with one last practical case, which there are actually a few different types of this case, which I don't know if we're going to go into all of them, but... is there any question of using a tea bag on Shabbos in terms of Meraked straining? Anybody heard anything about this?
Well, I've heard two things. One is,
yeah,
use a spoon to take it out, so it's okay. Not an issue. And I heard the other thing as well. When you take the tea bag out, there's always tea in it with it, so you're always taking some of the good with the bad.
Right. Okay. Good. The question is, again, there's a few different ways this could work, but let's say if you're taking a tea bag, so the concern is as follows. You pick up a tea bag, let's say that which is in your cup of tea. Okay, pick it up, take it out. So the question is, if you do that, might that be a concern of Meraked? Why would that be? How'd you explain what might be happening there?
It's more boring than it is Meraked.
Why?
You don't want it in your tea anymore, right? It's
I think you might stop slipping.
So you're talking about brewing it, or are you talking about removing it?
I was talking about removing it, but maybe you could talk about different aspects of it. Unfortunately, I don't drink tea, so I'm a bad person to talk about this.
No, I mean, I think I wouldn't think removing would be a Moroccan issue, it's more be a Bora issue.
So I think that what they say here is that we'll talk about tea more when we talk about Bishel, their whole question of making tea jobs.
Right.
We talk about Bishel, we'll discuss a lot of the different issues that are involved, including Sovea and cooking, obviously, also. We'll discuss that all together, but just for now, here, I'll read you what Shmir Shabbos says here. Again, this is a whole discussion, but. Here's a few cases. The first case he gives is where you're pouring in tea essence into your cup. This is not the same thing that we're talking about. Okay, that's a separate question. If you have, let's say, tea essence, so, you know, that's again a bishul issue of how you make tea essence and why you have to do that on Shabbos, according to some opinions. But if you have this, you know, stuff where the tea is cooked before Shabbos and then it comes into like a very strong, you know, concentration of tea and hot water, so if you pour that into your cup, and you're trying to keep back the tea leaves with the essence from coming into your cup, you want to keep that in your cupper, whatever you're pouring it with. So he says that's permissible, as long as you pour it very gently. I mean, that's not a problem, boer or Meraked, as long as you pour it very gently. However, what he does say is a question.
So you're talking about kids when there's no tea bags, it's just tea in the...
Yeah, tea and tea leaves, I guess. Yeah, tea and tea leaves. Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. Pour the water over it.
Yeah, yeah. If you do it very gently, that you're not actually blocking the tea bags or the leaves from going into the cup, that might be okay. The case that Josh was talking about is later on in the Shmir Shabbos, the Simchas Daled, where he says, Mutar lachim kos tei, you're allowed to prepare a cup of tea, with your tea bag that has tea leaves inside, or with a teaspoon, okay, which basically, you have also, he talks about a spoon which has little holes in it, where you put the tea leaves on the top. Okay, that we're going to talk about for Bishul, not for now, in terms of the temperature of the water. It's appropriate, it's good to take out the bag of tea from your cup, okay, with a spoon or teaspoon or anything like that, velobiyat, and not with your hands. Meaning, don't pull it out like this with the string with your hand, but rather take it out with a spoon. Why is that? Again, he doesn't say that you have to. This is nachon, it's appropriate. Why? Okay, if you keep the bag there, okay, after you pick it up, you keep it like in midair right on top of the tea, me'al gabei hamayim shebekos, on top of the water in your cup, what's going to happen is that some of the essence of tea inside the essence of the tea stuff inside the tea bag, some of the drops are going to drip down from the bag back into the cup. So there's a possibility, a concern that maybe that's considered a problem with boer. Because basically your tea stuff, whatever you want to call it, tea essence or leaves, whatever you have in your bag.
You're squeezing it a little bit here.
Right. Basically, when you pick it up like this and hold it like that, it's causing a little bit of pressure, which is going to cause some of the liquid on the bottom to drip out from the bag and go back into your cup. And the other stuff inside the bag, the regular solid stuff inside the bag, is gonna stay there. So he says here in the footnote, he's got a nice long footnote here about this. He says that taking out the bag itself from the cup is not a problem with boer, because the bag is a very significantly different entity from the liquid. We talked about this before, if you remember the whole thing with a big piece of meat in your soup or something like that. It's not a mixture because there's two totally separate things. That is not a problem. But the question of the drops coming out from the tea bag, he says, is a problem. And that he quotes here in the footnote that Rosh Hashanah Orbach says it's appropriate to be machmir, not to do it that way, and rather to use a spoon. Again, he has one or two sources based on some of the cases of Mishmeret and the Shulchan Aruch, which we didn't talk about, but the idea of the Mishmeret strainer, he has some parallel cases where he feels that it's problematic. And then he says maybe that's different. He says there's a possibility that maybe this is better. I'm sorry, the other way around. He says maybe those cases are okay, and then maybe this is worse, because basically it's all mixed together in the tea bag, and then when you take it out, you're really causing it to come down. Whatever the case is, again, he goes back and forth about this in the footnote, and it's in footnote to 192 here. So anyway, that's the discussion here. Again, it's not definitely usher, but it seems like it's recommended, if possible, to use a spoon to take your tea bag out. That's basically the story with that. Okay, again, there's plenty of other occasions here. We did not get to the part I wanted to talk about at the end. I can just tell you very quickly, but I don't think it pays to spend a lot of time on this now. He just goes through in the Shmir Shabbos at the end of the chapter different cases of selection. Okay, when you want to select your silver, let's say, to put them back in there, each one in their spot. So he said, in general, that's not okay. From previous weeks, we said that's a problem. If you're going to organize each one of them, even if you're putting them back, they're not for use right now. They're all getting put back, let's say, in their containers or in their drawers or whatever. So he says to organize them like that is going to be a problem because they're not for immediate use. That's a chashash of boer, because some say that even if you're not going to use either one, both of them are going to go back. That's still a problem. That we mentioned again a few weeks ago, I think we mentioned from the Prima Gutum, holds that might be a problem to put back two things which are both stolen. And they're both not going to be used now, but you organize them separately. That's a problem. Okay. Same thing with other types of similar examples. We talked about books or clothing or stuff like that, where if you're going to organize things and put them each one into their proper spot, into their compartment, so that may be a problem. And the best way to do that is do it one by one. Okay, you're not organizing, hold five in your hands at one time, but rather you pick up one, put it back. Pick up the next one, put it back.
That's okay for
some. Yeah. And for other things also. I mean, that's always okay. If you put back one at a time, that's not considered to be separation. Okay? All you're doing is picking up one at a time. That's not the normal derech bor. And the same thing is true also for toys. Okay, and the Shmir Shas actually points this out in the second to last sif in the parak. He says, for toys, that got mixed up, asur l'sadran b'aron. You can't organize them in the closet. Kol achad b'mekom ha'miyuad lo, if you put each one in its place. V'keyo v'shekol tzatzua shu lokeach b'yado, and give a shame to you know who lokeach. You're basically trying to organize each one that you put back. V'yish b'zeh isur b'rir, and that's a problem of borer. So again, if you do it one piece at a time, it's probably okay.
What about setting the table for lunch?
So again, so we, I think we discussed this last week, if I remember correctly. I think Moshe maybe. We said that that setting it for lunch, if you have like, you know, if you take like 10 pieces of silverware in your hand or 5 pieces in your hand, and then you start putting them out, if you're setting the table for lunch when it's not lunchtime yet, we said that might be a problem because it's not miyad, it's not for immediate use. What you can do is, again, if you either scatter them across the table, you take 10 pieces of silverware, you scatter them across the table, so then you don't have a mixture anymore. Okay, mm-hmm. So that would be okay. The other thing to do is if you take out from your drawer, you know, with your silverware, you take out one by one, that also would be okay. Mm-hmm. And that's not borer. But if you take out a bunch of them in your hand and you're holding all of them, and then afterwards you start putting them down, and it's not for immediate use, meaning you're setting the table 2 hours before lunch, let's say you set the table before you go to shul on Shabbos morning, before your wife goes to shul, whatever the situation is in your house, that presumably would be a problem. Okay, that you can't do. So that would be the story with that. In terms of toys, again, there's lots of different questions about toys which we can't get into now. What's considered to be like different types of toys? You know, different types of cards, different games, you know, with different pieces. Like, what's considered to be different categories of toys and mixtures? And it's really confusing. Okay, it's really not so clear. Again, I think we mentioned this before. It seems to be the main idea is that if the different toys or colors or whatever have a different function, okay, they're used in different ways, either for different teams or for different purposes, and that may be considered enough of a difference between them that would create different groups, and therefore it would be a problem to put them back if you're trying to organize them, to put each one back in their compartment for the blue ones, and for the red ones, and for the green ones, let's say, and you put them all back like that. So then that, yeah, so that presumably that would be a problem, meaning if you're cleaning up the game, and again, if you're using it, if you're doing it to use now... Great, I don't know if you want that or don't want that. The best way to do it, they're very loud, right? The best way to do it is probably just take all the money and just dump it all in altogether. Wow. Okay, that would be the way to do it. Because you're going to do it one piece by one piece at a time, it's going to take forever. You're not going to want to do that. Wow. But assuming that you actually want them organized, that would seem to be a real problem. If you're putting them away, it's not for immediate use. And they're used separately. A $50 bill in Monopoly and a $500 bill in Monopoly are definitely two different things. They can't be used for the same thing. So that should be a problem. Again, every game will have its own issues. You have to figure out for every game what the concern will be and when it's relevant. Again, it's most relevant for cleaning up rather than for setting up, because then you're going to be using it. Then you could say you're taking the ones that you do want. But anyway, these are things to be aware of, especially for what your kids play with, even if you're not playing with it. But if your kids are over the age of 3, then you have to sort of teach them. Again, I cannot say I do this always myself, but I'll have to try a little harder in my house. I don't know if my kids do it, but... Say I'm not always on top of what they're doing. I don't always pay attention, but this is something which is really, again, if they're over the age of chinuch, which for negative isurim, for prohibitions, is more than the age of 3, you have to really be aware of what they're doing and tell them if they're doing something wrong. So it's going to be mostly for me also to pay more attention to what my kids do on Shabbos, and if there's something they're doing wrong, to make sure to let them know. Okay, just a very quick idea, which I saw today. I think this is from the Al Sheikh. I'll have to explain it. I'll have to figure out what this means. I don't know what this means, but I'll tell you what he says. He basically says that, you know, Chumash by chance. This comes from Parsha, I think, in a couple weeks around Parsha Kitisa, I think is where he gets this from. So I can find it here. It says the following. Says here, "Shmartem es haShabbos ki kodesh hi lachem." Okay, you should keep Shabbos because it's kodesh for you. Okay? It's holy for you. He says, "What does it mean that it's holy for you? Why is it holy for you?" And the question is like this. Okay, meaning Hashem rested. Hashem rested when he after he created the world, whatever that means. He stopped creating. I think I'm paraphrasing a little here. I don't know if I got his exact language down because I don't have it in front of me right now. This is more or less what he's trying to say. That I may have gotten maybe somewhat of my ideas more than him. But the non-Jews also, some non-Jews also have a day of rest. What does it mean that it's specifically holy for you? So he says, and maybe again, I'm maybe throwing in something a little bit of other stuff, not exactly what the Al-Sheikh said himself. I have to write it down to tell you next week. But I think what he's trying to say is that we are partners with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, meaning it's holy for you because we are actually, you know, one, our neshama inside of us is actually connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now again, I'm not saying what non-Jews have or don't have, but in general, even if you have non-Jews that have, you know, a day of rest, which many do, many observe Sunday or Friday depending on your religion, but it's not the same thing. Okay, they're not connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Again, this is not a bad thing. It's just the way that it is. We have a lot of responsibilities because we're not connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if they choose to be one of us, they can convert. But we're connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a way that, that the rest of the world is not. Okay, we're attuned to what he says. We want to always do what he wants. We always try to have in mind, is this the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do? We have to live our lives very rigorously. Okay, but because of that, on the flip side, when it comes to Shabbos, so Kikodesh Hilachem, it's holy for you because your neshama is part and parcel of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world and rested, okay, whatever that means, on the seventh day, so for our neshama also, our neshama connects to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and feels the same thing. He feels, the neshama feels the rest also on Shabbos the same way that Hashem does. And therefore, it's Kodesh for us, it's Lachem, it's for you, it's not necessarily for the rest of the world. Again, the question is, you know, how much do we feel that? Meaning, do we feel, hopefully, you know, do we feel that Shabbos is just a day of, you know, not going to work, a day of relaxation, which is nice, and obviously that is important, that is part of the idea of Shabbos. But then Shabbos could as easily be Sunday in the Christian world, or Friday in the Muslim world. Okay, where is Shabbos Shabbos? Where is Shabbos unique? And the answer is that you have to, you know, get to the point that it's not just happening inside of you without you realizing it, that you really feel your neshama's feeling of connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and being Ki Kodesh Yilachem, that it's Kodesh for you. It's not just a regular day of the week, it's a day of spirituality, getting close to Hashem and feeling the neshama Yisera. We have a special neshama on Shabbos. The question is, do we feel it? Do we know that it's there? Or sometimes it just goes by and we don't even realize that it's there. I mean, you have your Havdalah, you have your Besamim, which some say is, you know, to get to make you feel better after the neshama Yisera left. Did you even realize that your neshama Yisera left? Did you even realize it was there in the first place? You know? It's not so simple. Okay, so again, yes, Shabbos is about rest and Shabbos is about relaxation, and that's very important, obviously. But at the same time, if Shabbos is just that and not, you know, connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a spiritual sense, then you know, then you're missing part of it. I felt a little bit of this last Thursday night. I sometimes go shopping on Thursday night to go to Usharad, and I come back and on radio, would you?
Brave.
Yeah, brave. Why is it brave?
Right. The crowds can be ill.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I go Thursday night, 11 o'clock at night, 10 o'clock at night or whatever. So anyway, it's on radio Kol Chai, if you're familiar with it. So Friday, so every Thursday night, they have a kumzitz on the radio from like 10 to 12. It's really cool. It's really nice. I often am driving during that time. I don't know. Just, what is it? 93 FM in this part of the country. 93 FM. It's basically a frum radio station. Often Haredi, sometimes other stuff. But you know, I love this. So he has different songs and he has a different focus every week. One week he had a focus on Chabad. When it was one week, so the Chabad things. And, you know, whatever it is. But you know, it's really really nice. So last Thursday night, they at the very end of the program, so they played. Basically what they do is they have all the people in the studio there are singing along. They have, I don't know how many people are in the studio at the same time. But basically they're all singing. It's a real kumzitz. It's not just, you know, a singer with a song playing. They actually have music there and everybody's singing. You hear on the radio, everybody's singing. It makes you know, so they, the last thing he said, we're going to play now the Lachadodi song. And basically they play the Bres Lachadodi, the slow part of the first part of, you know, Bres Lachadodi. Lachadodi, Likras Kala. And basically, he says, as the person who's, you know, the host of the show, it says basically, you can, you know, sing this song now. Start imagining in your mind that it's Friday night and you just finished your fish and you're starting the chicken or whatever, and you can just feel yourself getting calm and the neshama starting to shine and opening up as you sing this song. And I'm sitting there in the car and they're all starting to sing on the radio, na 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 na. You have 50 people on the, you know, singing. I'm starting to sing along, you know, the top of my lungs. There's nobody else in the car with me, you know, and I'm feeling this feeling of like, wow, you know, this is like my. It wasn't even Shabbos. It's only Thursday night. But we already know Thursday night and Friday, you know, it already is the beginning of Shabbos coming. You feel, you know, your neshama is connecting through Shira in other ways, you know, Ruchnius to Kadosh Baruch Hu. So B'ezras Hashem, we should all be able to get to the point in whatever way it is for each of us in a different way, to the point that we really feel that our neshama is reaching up to the sky and trying to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is really what it's a part of. And we feel the Kodesh Yivacham, the Kedusha of our connection to Shabbos.
Shabbat.
Oh.